Hello. And welcome to the Cubicorn Games Podcast. My name is Dustin Morbido. I was about to like smash the table for emphasis, but I didn't want it to make a noise, so then I kind of stopped for a second. Joining me tonight to talk about TV and the Marvel and the super people.
You know, game stuff.
Yeah.
Game stuff. We can talk nerd, about whatever we culture. Want.
Let's talk about TV.
I have given up on anything. That's right, I have given up. After the year and a half we've been through, I have given up. Joining me today to quit. Lorraine Morbido is here.
It's perfect time to quit. I'm filled with noodles. It's great.
Yeah, it was tasty. Thank you for making dinner.
You're welcome.
Joining us this evening to talk about stuff and things, Philip McGrath is here.
I don't quit.
I never quit.
Sometimes, but not right now.
All
right,
fair enough. Additionally, joining us, Wade McGrath is here.
I am a quit.
Acquitted.
You're acquitted.
Quit personified.
The club don't fit. Wade's got to quit.
Accurate.
Joining us, someone who also remembers that O.J. Simpson killed some people, Kyle McGrath is here. Kids don't even...
I quit. That's what I do. And then we made an O.J. Simpson joke, and I'm just kind of breaking it half now.
Look, man, I'll take it up. So, I don't care. Yeah, I'll stand by O.J. Simpson killed some people. Come at me. Sue me, O.J. Let's go.
I mean, good. He might.
Yeah, you know. Maybe he's a listener. Maybe he's an avid. Maybe he's a fan. And I just broke his little heart.
All right. So
finally, Brian, let me introduce you, and then you can say the thing you're going to say.
Okay.
Join our last member of the crew, Brian Lumper, is here. That's right. Heading for the state line.
Yikes.
What were you about to lay on us, Brian?
It's Brian Lupfer.
So what I was about to say is that apparently on Twitter or like on the internet somewhere, maybe Instagram, O.J. Simpson posted a video about basically an anti-trans video.
Great.
Saying X's are X's and Y's are Y's. And then someone replied to it with, "But why do we remember you killed your ex?"
Yikes.
Just fucking gave it to him. Mm-hmm. And it just... I didn't deliver it right, but it's...
Sure,
you know,
no,
someone,
I got it. That's,
someone laid into OJ for being a fucking bigot.
As if he needed...
As he deserves.
Right, as
among
if
other
needed more reasons to dislike OJ Simpson.
Yeah, you know, a bigot whatever. On top of being a murderer. You can't just suck one way.
Man, oh, that's something.
Not even that good at football.
No.
Fuck.
He was pretty good.
I actually have no idea what his football career was like, so...
He won the Heisman Trophy.
Okay.
And then I think he had to sell it on eBay.
Probably.
That sounds right.
Or he had it stolen from him, because that's the one he actually faced jail time when he took a bunch of his memorabilia back from people. He just, like, lifted it.
Oh, my God.
The world is weird.
No shit.
Anyway.
As the youngest, I'm curious what Lorraine's memory of O.J. Simpson is.
Because I remember that shit on TV, like... Like, I remember in the instances where I was, like, at home watching, you know, in the presence of a parent
NPR.
Watching daytime television, that, like, the court shit, I remember it as it was happening on television.
Right. I mean, I didn't watch
I
it on television.
Like, they had to interrupt the Olympics to, like, have a slow speed chase on the freeway for 3 hours.
I mean, like...
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
I've always been, like, aware of that. That's probably where I knew of O.J. Simpson from more so than football. Like, I was probably just, like... Privy to the fact that he was a football player, but it was more like the chase. Like, but I didn't watch it. Like, I would have been God knows how old.
So here's another fun thing. A pro wrestling angle by the WWF used the OJ chase footage.
Was it in context? Was it like supposed to be OJ Simpson, or was it just that they just pretended it was like a wrestler running from?
No, it was supposed to be Goldust fleeing after the end of the match against Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Huh. All right,
somebody video image searched now. Chase, you know, freeway escape chase.
Right,
or whatever.
They had a
no. This was like almost
images.
Immediately at like it, within
like
the year
right
or two
after.
Of
oh my
the OJ case. So it was out of touch.
Man, that's
like,
wild.
Incredibly poor taste.
Yeah, it was not the best informed thing that they've ever done. Not that they often do informed things or anything that makes sense.
They have like a brain cell between all of them.
Basically.
He's really, the whole reason we've got the Kardashians.
Like a fraction of an ounce of morality between a lot of them, I would say, is more the...
Sure, right. I mean, Vince McMahon is a really shitty person. Mm-hmm. Like, he's just a horrible man.
Yeah.
Like, he is very smart, but, like...
I mean, right, he's a good businessman, and part of the reason he's a good businessman is because he treats people like human shit.
Morally bankrupt individual.
But anyway...
We love to see
more morality or less morality than John Walker.
I'm going to say, honestly, guys, this is going to tie in even deeper than like than you think when I get to the feelings about some of my thoughts about Winter Soldier. So let's get into
it. We've already like stepped into some race stuff here, so let's go.
Hey, sure, and malicious business.
Spoiler warning for our viewers, because we haven't said that yet.
Thank you, Wade. You're right.
I mean, it's going to be...
I do appreciate... I do like doing that.
Name and like the podcast name and thumbnail will definitely...
Yeah, right. If you read the description, it'll say it there too, but it's always worth it. Bears repeating,
it's true,
in voice form before you get into it. But yes, we're gonna get into it now. Thank you, Phil, for that, for putting that up for us. Thank you, Wade, for reminding us to sound the horns. We're gonna talk about Falcon,
talk about OJ some more.
You said the other thing, the other thing that comes after. We're talking about Falcon and the Winter Soldier. It is out in its entirety. We watched last episode, we just watched it a second time. While we were eating food, I was like, because we watched it on a Friday, and then I was like, I do want to re-up on it, so we just watched the last one again. We finished it like minutes ago, and then came in here to do the thing.
Woo!
Coming in hot.
Basically.
And so if someone, I don't know, I have no idea where my feelings are going to lie relative to other people's. I suspect that they might be a little different. Does anyone want to start?
It's great.
Yes.
Like, all right, probably just throw it out there, like the what's her name? Agent Carter, not
Sharon.
Sharon Carter. That was like pointless,
garbage. Bad,
but
I
like,
agree.
If you put that aside, it's great.
Okay, because I have like,
yeah, that's pretty much exactly how I feel about it.
I have so many conflicted opinions, and it comes down to like a thing that I think lots of people like. I think the worst fans of shit don't understand when sometimes when people criticize things that like that for people who are generally more critical people. You tend to criticize things that you're more likely to criticize things that you actually have interest in than things that you don't.
Mm-hmm.
Like, mm-hmm. What would be the point of me like dunking on like the Fast and Furious movie franchise? Because I don't care. Like, I don't give a shit. So with that said, go ahead.
On the topic of America and Americans, that's part of why being a patriot is. Caring enough to give your country shit because you want it to be better, rather than just the whole like, I love my country regardless of anything.
Be a U.S. agent.
Yeah,
something like that.
Be a super patriot.
just a weird.
Sure, no, that bears throwing out considering the content of the series. And I will say then that like kind of looping back. I mean, I agree with you on that specific thing. And as a whole, I really like the series, but. Kind of like I was thinking, like, as we, like, when we had that meetup or whatever, we were hanging out outside, and I was like, I sure think they're gonna, like, shank the shit out of this by the time this wraps up. And I feel like they did that more than not for me. Like, I feel like the finale was, like, 40% successful and, like, 60%. Because the stuff for me that worked in it is, like, as far as Sam and Bucky, like, their stuff, I'm like, great. Good, awesome, two thumbs up. I'm way into it. But all those other like things that kind of like all the other loose ends that they tied up in neat, and for me like kind of unsatisfying little bows are like, I think the fucking power broker thing is kind of lame.
I think that's actively the worst part of the series by a hilarious margin.
And I think we're all probably in agreement about that, I'm guessing.
I didn't mind that she was there at all. Like, it was kind of cool seeing, like, because she obviously committed some crimes in, like, Civil War. Like, she went against what she should have been doing, so her being on the lam made sense. But the way it escalated, it was just, it felt like... We have to pay this off. Like, we have to do this thing. Like, oh, like, it's a hashtag girl moment because she's this big deal now. Like, whatever.
Well, see, I would even say, further from that, and here's the thing So one of the other things I feel this way about specifically, and the other one I just feel totally different about, but I also think that I think that the way that her thing plays out and what's the other guy's name? U.S. agent John Walker. For me, his thing totally is like a shitty failure in my opinion. And for both of these, I think it's for similar reasons of that. Like when we were talking about the Snyder Cut and the things that I still think are the worst about that and like the gigantic product that he released is that it spends way too much energy setting up a bunch of shit that distracts from the core narrative. And at the time, I'm pretty sure I said that, like, generally speaking, Marvel doesn't seem to do that. But in these cases, for both of those characters, I feel like most of the stuff, for John Walker specifically in the finale, is just to set up the next thing and just left me, like, out on a limb for the narrative that is contained within this series.
I thought it was perfect.
He got over himself. It was a little quick, but he got over himself.
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't think he got over himself. I think he had one final, like, conflict within himself.
Yeah,
and he aired just a little bit on the side of good instead of the side of revenge. And, like, that plays perfectly to the character that they set up, which is that he's a complex dude who actually wants to do the right thing, but is constantly at war with himself about, you know, doing the wrong thing because it feels better.
I think what Dustin's getting at is that it was too quick.
The way the show presents him as, you know, a dickhead, and I think it serves the show well to have him be that character, and it's acted really well. But they also, like, set up really on that, like, he's a war hero, he's, you know, highly decorated, blah, blah, blah. And I think, like, the power of being Captain America and trying to live up to being Captain America, I think, just went through his head and drove him crazy.
That and the super soldier serum.
And he's kind of better.
I wouldn't even say, like,
you know, morally dubious.
They took a person who probably had, like, PTSD, who has seen and done some shit that fucked him up, and who probably never really got better from those things, and then they put him in an impossible situation where he had to fill in for the shoes of arguably the greatest hero of all time, and he didn't have the superhero serum to do it. And then he got his ass beaten, like, 5 times in a row or whatever.
Right.
And he still was sort of like, he wasn't sure he was even going to take the serum. He was like, I don't even know if I want to do this. And he, you know, had that conversation with Lamar about it, talked himself into it. And I think, and this, they sort of set this up early on, but, like, they explain his character as someone who has always made the correct decision. And I feel like he probably has always had anger issues, but just been able to stay in control of them. And when he had the serum, he just wasn't quite able to keep control of it in that moment after Hodges died. That was, like, his only mistake, really, in the whole show, arguably. Like, he killed that dude.
First mistake, I would say, but
it was his first major mistake. And he was kind of a dick before that. But he hadn't really done anything majorly wrong before that.
And his heart was ultimately in the right place. He wants to do right by America.
I mean, one of the things I think the show did pretty well is establishing the difference between Walker as Captain America, but mostly he exists as, you know, a tool of the government versus what Captain America is supposed to be.
And yeah, yeah.
But right up to the point where he killed that guy, and even, like, you could argue as he killed that guy, like, he's just being what he was taught to be, and he says it later, like, I just did what you told me to do, man.
Yeah, right. and
Abbott, 100%, if he had killed that guy behind closed doors, nobody would have given a fuck. Like, the U.S. government would have been like, good job.
Right, it was just, it was a PR issue.
It was a PR nightmare, exactly.
Yeah, it's fine. I just, I both agree with a lot of those assessments, and still, for me, just disagree on, like, how neatly the bow ties up in the last episode specifically, because I do think the lead up to that is just, like, so good and so interesting, and I bet a lot of people, at least through those first handful episodes, probably might even give that character just, like, a little more shit than he deserves in terms of being completely unsympathetic, because I don't think that's the case. Like, the thing that I love about, is it episode 4 when he, like, bashes that dude's skull in? Whichever episode ends with him, like, smushing that guy's face with the Captain America shield is, the thing I love about it is that, Like, I completely understand his motivation. Like it is a perfectly executed... We all know that this is the wrong thing to do, but also I think pretty much everybody understands why you would be driven to do it in the scenario. Like it's a completely understandable, completely immoral reaction. Like, it is both of those things at the same time, and that is really, really good. Like you're saying before, they do lay out a bunch that, like, that he is kind of damaged goods in a way that, he's like a pre-therapy Bucky, basically. Like, he clearly has baggage and some PSD, and he has clearly been fucked up in a way that, like, the people who have put him in a position to keep going out there and getting into the action have not addressed that he has got some serious problems that he needs to get taken care of. And so with all that said, like, the thing that I would have liked to see happen with that character is that that stuff doesn't really get resolved at all here if he's going to have a future in the MCU. Like, I want to see that him in some other series or some other movie where they go deeper into that stuff.
And the fact that the team for Thunderbolts coming next year.
And the fact that, like, exactly. That in a moment, he sees a car full of people going over the edge, and prior to that, he's still just, like, totally revenge-driven.
Okay, so there's a huge but subtle thing that addresses that. When he's on his back and, like, ready to Hulk out, he sees the Medal of Honor that he stitched into his own goddamn shield, and it plays this discordant music where he, like, is clearly struggling in himself to remember why he's doing the thing he's doing, and immediately after that is that scene that you're talking about. And I think that's so fucking perfect, because it represents, like, maybe the last time we see him have a visual representation of what he's supposed to be, and he follows that. And, like, I'm betting so hard that when Thunderbolts comes around, that Medal of Honor is going to get shattered or melted or lost or something, and that's going to represent his downfall.
I bet we never see it again.
and I'll say that I guess
was pretty messed up by the end of the episode.
That I guess that's really, like, for my point of view, that's, like, fine. Because like I said, the other thing there that I think, like, where the other parts of the series succeed, where that part fails for me, is that, like, that Bucky's journey is so much better, like, that they clearly show that he's been working at this shit for months and months and months, and that's how therapy really is. But exactly, but, like, so I just don't know why, since these characters are going to reappear in other media at some point, like, why they felt the need to just, like, kind of, like, dust their hands off and be like, okay, John Walker's fine, he's just another part of the ensemble now.
So he can get in that black U.S. agent suit by the time the Thunderbolt starts.
But yeah, that's just, I don't know. That's so,
I paint him as, like, fine, because...
Yeah, me neither.
But they go as far as, and here's the other thing where I feel about
totally
this,
wrapped up.
Is that, like, even
he's still going to be messed up.
Even if he's going to not chase down Carly or whatever and, like try to save the van full of people or whatever, which like, that interaction gets to one of the other things I didn't like about the finale, which is how fucking poorly they handled the Flag Smashers, in my opinion, which I still always expected them to, like, shank that shit into the dirt, and I still feel like they most likely did it, but even after that, the thing, like, they still had the dynamic leading up in this whole series where he is, like, kind of gradually, like, he gets more passive-aggressive into actual-aggressive toward, Sam and Bucky, just because they want to submit to him as Captain America, and even that in, like, the, like, the face turn that he does is, like, all is forgiven, and they're having, you know, banter and shit, and everything's just fine. I was like, this is so dumb. This is stupid. Don't, come on, man. Two episodes ago, they were in a near-death battle in a warehouse somewhere, and now they're, like, ribbing each other, and it's, like, a fun thing. Like, fuck you.
I didn't see much of the having fun ribbon thing, but also there is a tiny bit, but also more importantly, like, realistically in that scenario, would you stop to fight him? No, you fucking wouldn't, because there's literal senators who are being kidnapped and, like, about to get murdered. You've got more important shit to deal with.
No, I'm not saying they should fight each other. I'm just saying that they should not necessarily, like, have buried the hatchet and no longer have any beef whatsoever. Like,
it's not clear, but I'm pretty sure, like, a fair amount of time passes between that happening and the last episode.
But that's,
you know,
even
in that time, like, everybody's gone from where they were in Eastern Europe or whatever, and now they're all back in New York, and everything's kind of moved on a little bit, and everybody's making their next moves.
But their little exchange,
and, I mean, you also
I forget exactly the line where he's like, Lincoln said that, or whatever stupid thing it was, where they're kind of, like, winking and nodding each other. That was minutes after everybody is arrested, and it's still, like, they're in the crash site or the fucking... whatever's going on. I don't know. It felt really dumb to me.
I think characters becoming like uncharacteristically lighthearted after a big battle is just the most Marvel Universe thing there is.
Yeah, that's part of it.
Well, so
I got to save the universe, and I almost died, and let's get some shawarma. Like, that's just normal MCU stuff.
Well, and there's additional context. Like, you have to
now.
You have to remember that, like, Sam was a PTSD, like, support kind of guy, counselor kind of guy.
I love how they brought that back for him.
Yeah, for sure.
And then, you know, Bucky obviously went through his own shit, and, like, he knows what it's like to kind of be the villain while also, and then going to be the hero.
And it's important to remember that both of those characters have murdered a lot of people, so it's not like they're that much cleaner than Walker here.
Yeah, there's a lot of context not discussed in that, and I mean, also, you know, it's like they had a fucked up battle, Carly died, and like, you know, all that shit, and it was just a fucking disaster of a mess that they were dealing with, and it's, you know, I could see guys like that are, you know, PTSD ridden, have dealt with everything they did, turning to the albeit, you know, tropish Marvel humor that they have, but they would use that to cope, you know, immediately after the fact. So I accept that as that.
I think I'm still definitely more in the camp of Dustin, that Lincoln line did feel really weird. But slightly before that, when they're actually talking to the rest of the Flag Smashers and they're both quipping at them, that felt more natural than the interaction they had between each other. Because, like, at that point, they don't know what's going on with Sam and Sharon and Carly. They've been separated. They've been following these other Flag Smashers while they're off dealing with that. And their exchange, like, oh, like this app, like, right? Like,
sure,
that quip with them, because they've got a little more like antagonistic of a history, but also sympathetic with them, because like with all the Sam and Carly stuff that's been going on, like, Bucky definitely knows that. So he's like, that interaction felt more natural, but the interaction between Sam or Bucky and Walker there definitely felt a little weird, even though like it is like, that is just like a Marvel thing, but it still just kind of felt a little tone deaf to like the whole spiel. Cause then it like cuts right back to Sam and Carly, which, I mean, of course it would, but I don't know. It did feel weird. And like, them standing out by the ambulance together, I felt was more indicative of them kind of like, while they're watching Sam and seeing the senators and all that stuff, them kind of like, I feel like they maybe share a glance or two, like, while he's talking, and that felt more genuine of, like,
yeah,
definitely, like, we get this, like, this is making sense from, like, that understanding point, and, like, that little banter did just, I don't know, it didn't do it for me either.
And to both tie it back to a thing you guys said, which kind of segued into Lorraine's discussion of her feelings on that whole, and to bring it back to the start of the series to really touch on something that I am super positive about, that I'm pretty sure that we all, like, 1,000% agree on, is that, like, and again, considering that, like, this was the most important part to execute, because these are the two people who are at the title of the show, the Bucky and Sam stuff totally works for me, and particularly the way that Sam earns becoming Captain America, like, to himself even more than anyone else, I just am, like, really impressed that the way that they made that arc pan out, right down to the start of the show, where I'm so glad that, like, in the same way that I was glad Endgame didn't just immediately, like, flip the switch to, like, full battle mode within the first 10 minutes or whatever coming out of Infinity War, I was really glad that the whole series was, like, a big, long arc to get him to be confident enough to try to be Captain America and to show the audience over a long handful of episodes of why he clearly deserves to be.
As opposed to him just picking up the shield, right, and, like, going with it from there.
Yeah, like, he proves himself over the course of multiple episodes to be probably the most, like, emotionally mature person in the entire MCU, of just, like, he's just really in touch with
himself.
Like, right, with himself, and even more importantly, like, the people around him, like, the little nod to, if it's in the first or second episode where, like, I think Bucky's in one of his therapy sessions and she's like, you're still not returning, you know, his texts or whatever. Like, it's just so good. I love all that stuff. I think they did such a great job on like that part of that series.
I really loved their development over the course of the whole series. Like, they were basically on, like, the terms we left them at, like, the last time we really saw them together, which was Civil War, of their, like, kind of like
And they build a, they actually build a friendship. Like, yeah. they're acquaintances and somewhere on the spectrum of like acquaintances and coworkers, mm-hmm. even still leading into this. And then by the end of it, they've clearly like shown that they have each other's backs and mm-hmm. there's a little more to it than just,
I'm pretty
that
sure
we
my
work together sometimes.
My favorite episode was when they went back to Sam's sister's house and like they're fixing up the bow and like he just shows up and like he's helping him and they're kind of like they finally talk like for the first time they really talk about themselves and they learn more about each other and kind of call each other out on stuff like that like were their hang-ups that they were just kind of like butting heads against the whole rest of the series but that
I'm actually right-handed.
That was cute. That was
a good funny line. And for me there are a couple of like dialogue moments that are like any of a handful of them could be the best moment of the series for me right now. I think the one that's just barely in contention, although not by much, is the little interaction they have in my favorite episode, which was the second to last one, which is when they're kind of like throwing the shield back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's such a good, like, Bucky both, he apologizes for Sam for, like, passing judgment on him giving up the shield in the first place, because he literally just recognizes that he didn't know, like, how hard that was and what he was going through.
Mm-hmm.
And Sam gives him that, like, incredible insight about just, like, look, man, this is what it is to apologize. Like, it's just a great moment. Yeah. Like, I really love that scene. It was just really good.
Yeah, I love the whole training. It was just nice.
They nailed a lot of that emotional stuff between the characters and even between other characters. Like, the character growth in this series is probably the best in all of the MCU, I would say.
Mm-hmm. And that's the benefit of TV.
Off the top of my head.
Where you just get more time to do stuff like that you can't do in, like, a two-hour movie that has to have, 4 to 5 mandated action sequences that are a few minutes long each and stuff like that.
Because I really like that first confrontation with Carly. Like, when it's just Sam and Carly, like, when they're because I always saw her even from the beginning as a very sympathetic antagonist. Like, she's not a villain.
Mm-hmm.
She's got, like, her whole group has a very legitimate reason for existing. Like, maybe their methods aren't great, because they're not, but, the core behind it is something that I don't think any, like, a movie version of this story could have ever touched on, because, like, the movie was always the, like, main arc of, like, kind of these people is always, like, the people who came back, not the people who were still there, because they kind of touched on it before they went and did the time heist in Endgame. But having her being able to connect with Sam because he has that, like, the PTSD therapy experience was just, it was a nice, like, kind of, like, quieter moment in that episode where they had, like, they get attacked in fucking Zemo's house. They've got, like, all this other stuff going on around them.
And on top of that, because he just literally knows firsthand what it's like to be oppressed and persecuted to some degree. Like, that other little scene that, where they're just coming out of, I believe it's coming out of and not going into Isaiah's house for the first time, and the cops show up. They're like, is he bothering you, sir?
Yeah.
Like, that was fucking good job, that guys. Was, man, right, that was...
I couldn't believe that they had the balls to make that scene.
Yeah, that was a big ball moment.
The whole series and the way it deals with race is, like, such a shock for me coming from, like, Disney and the MCU just playing so far in the safe zone for everything else, like, to actually set up some of these very real and legitimate issues that they would face and then actually tackling them.
Even like the Isaiah stuff, like, everything with him.
Say, like, Isaiah Bradley's character is so good because it illustrates just also like his own viewpoint of being, you know, pretty well screwed by the government and probably society as a whole, and why he is completely justified to not think that Captain America should be a black man or no black man should want to be. And that also leads into Sam and completely understanding them and relating to that, but then doing it anyway.
Right. And having good reason to do it. Like, you get to see both sides of it.
But also to give them the hesitation and to maybe learn from it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
The fact that they brought it up both sides at all is like...
Mm-hmm.
And that great scene at the end where he gets in his own wing in the Captain America Museum.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so...
Yeah, that was great.
Now we're coming back to, like... And I'm going to preface this in so many different ways. First of all, I will say I respect the shit out of them for, like you said, for going there, for, like, really stepping in it and making the show about something as opposed to about nothing. So, like, on that level, I really respect that even the attempt to do something like that with just, you know, like, popular media that doesn't have to be that at all. So, two thumbs up for that. I will say that this kind of ties into the last thing
that, like I said, kind of like it's kind of the sticking of the landing on some of the like race and class stuff. With the way that the Flag Smashers storyline wraps up, that is the last thing for me that I really, really dislike about this. And part of it is what happens in the series, and part of it is this is a pattern I have been seeing that has happened in so many Disney-related media products at this point that I'm wondering if this is if some executive is putting this note on every single script that gets passed across their desk. But there has been this consistent tendency, first of all, the way that they deal with Carly is I feel like this is the way that they deal with all of the most complex characters in Marvel. Like, she got killmongered, basically. Like, there's a person who has a really good point that we're definitely going to show is just going to go too far, and so it's okay to bury them, to just put them 6 feet under and wash our hands of it and call it a day. And then by the same note, the problem that they are railing against is within the universe, mostly resolved by having a person of power sat down and calmly explained to the thing that they did wrong, like the evil what they committed on a large group of people. I'm trying to think of like the list of like, it happens in Mary Poppins to some extent. That's kind of in Dumbo a little bit, that remake. It's in Black Panther does that a little, but not quite as bad. Frozen 2 does exactly that.
Yeah.
Where, like, Frozen 2 raises this whole specter of, like, but what if colonialism bad? And then colonialism bad is just solved by, like, oh, you guys colonized us. And like, oh, we're sorry. Well, now that you told us about it, we won't do it anymore. and that scene for me where, I feel like it's a 2 minute long monologue where Sam has like a back and forth on like live TV and on the Twitter feeds and whatever the fuck is going on.
RSS feeds.
And he does literally like, I feel like somebody might as well like kick a chair towards him so he can turn it backwards and sit down, and then like throw a hat on him so he can like put it and tilt it up sideways so he can tell all these powerful white people that they should be less bad, and then they will be. Like, I found that scene to be, like, so embarrassing and so unreasonable in terms of how systemic issues get resolved in real life. Like, I was just... I was so mad at that sequence.
That scene is basically, not word for word, but that's, like, basically exactly what he does in the comic book space. Is he just goes on these long speeches and kind of tries his best to speak truth to power and talk down to the white man and stuff like that. Like, and yeah, it was an over the top kind of silly scene to just have him monologue like that, but it was also very comic booky, which I accepted.
Well, you're right about that. And like, that absolutely
just like have Captain America throw down his philosophies since he's going to be the Captain America now.
Kyle, now that you mentioned that like codifies perfectly, because my other sense about that was like, and I looked it up because I was curious, and there were multiple writers on this episode anyway. But the fact that you contextualize it that way makes even more sense to me, because the other thing about that sequence for me is that the scene that comes after it, his last encounter with Isaiah that leads up to him taking him to the museum, it like expresses a very similar sentiment and is just so much better. Like, it's like a million times better. Like, it is startling how much better executed it is for me in that interaction with Isaiah than it is in the other thing before it that just feels so stilted and so goofy and so that just really feels like it sweeps away what it is to actually struggle to make change in the world.
I think they missed the mark on the political aspects of that scene, but I do think it landed for Sam's growth and for showing who he is as a character. So, like, to me, it's like it was okay.
Yeah, and if there's any part of it that does work for me, for sure, it's the fact that, like, yeah, I know it's going to be hard to be black and Captain America, but I'm going to fucking do it.
Yeah.
America.
Yeah, right. I liked the meat of the speech, but it's like it did feel like basically what you were saying, hearing that is kind of how the comics are, does help make some sense. And it was like, it just, there aren't that many like long-winded monologues in any of these movies or shows.
Pretty rare,
but yeah. Like, it was like, at least it had substance to it, like, even if it was kind of like a little off
cheesy, sure, but also like what exactly is the alternative here? Because they're not going to make a show that spans 3 months where legislators arduously cover the fiscal duties revolving around this particular issue.
Give me that show, Wade.
So here's my thought, and I had like I had wondered that on the after the first viewing, and then by the time we got through the second one, I came to it. Like, this is my rewrite for how that sequence would go. In a similar way to like they have the post credits scene where Sharon's in, like, she's got her little Senate subcommittee hearing or whatever. Like, I would do a, like, 6 months later, whatever, some amount of time. Just put, they've done that before, just put text on the screen that says time has passed.
It just says New York.
And then put him in like, a Senate subcommittee hearing or whatever, where they're like, basically, I want
make him a lobbyist.
Basically, and more importantly for me, I want there to be some friction between entrenched power and people who are trying to make change. Like, I don't want the senator who has just been victim to a terrorist attack just, like, nodding and smiling, like, oh, you have a good point. Terrorists are people. Like, I want him to come into the room and be like, all right, Sam, well, you know, we've allowed you into this hearing after strong demand based on your exemplary service record to weigh in on this very important issue. Mm-hmm. And then he can give even basically the same speech. And then I just want there to be some pushback from the shitheads in power who clearly, because that's not how real life works. Because people who are in positions of power and abuse that power do not just like, oh yeah, you make a really good point when they're told that they've done a bad.
since you've watched it twice and also very recently, does that scene end with like the senators actually committing to do anything?
No,
to mess
it doesn't.
Okay. No, it ends with the guy's like, sure, hey, there's that. A flag smasher in the river. Can you go get him? And he's like, yeah
right. 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 Look,
and then ultimately, like, that gets dropped as like, I think Isaiah tells him that.
That something is different.
Well, Isaiah tells him that, like, hey, I heard they're not going to, like, kick everybody out of these countries that they're living in.
There was a newscast in the background of the scene.
I will say the senator's
approach that nothing changed based on the speech, but I guess
my opinions on that scene, it's like, when I saw it, I thought it was, you know, it was very much an afternoon special.
Sure.
In the way it was delivered and the way it was presented, like the framing of it and everything was afternoon special. But it like part of what was good about it was that it had Sam discussing, you know, like someone that's supposed to be acting as Captain America on a Disney presentation, explaining what the problem, what the like systemic issues are, like, or talking about explaining systemic issues as a concept and discussing all that shit. So then, like, you know, kids and teenagers, preferably teenagers, with the way the show is, that watch it can kind of get an idea of what that is. And even the rock-headed adults, hopefully they can watch it and take a little bit from it, you know, that I look at it as more of like an expositional speech pointed at the viewers that don't understand the Black experience, delivered in the framing of an afternoon special.
Right. And ultimately, we don't know,
Mark, is that point?
We don't know how much time passes between him giving that speech and Congress deciding to do something else.
Yeah, and there could have been political pressure from you know, the citizenry against it because Sam is Captain America.
And again, that's kind of like in my
against it.
Yeah, in my reimagining of that scene, like I said, that's where I would like to see it, like that, like based on popular public pressure, the shitty people in power are being forced to begrudgingly do something that is sort of okay. But
yeah,
to springboard off of that,
I see it
a tiny bit. And again, this is like this falls outside of the purview of necessarily just this show for me, because every time this happens in a Disney thing, like I said, it strikes me personally to my core more and more with the knowledge I have of the inner workings of the Walt Disney Company, is that for me, in a vacuum, like I think it's the thing that you said, Brian, like if you take it out of the context of that Disney is one of the most powerful corporations on earth.
Well.
And that they have a history of abusing the shit out of people at various positions in the company, then that's fine. Then I think it's all good natured. But I think within that context of that, as a giant corporation that wants the most money possible, that literally the only thing that they do these days is platitudes towards goodness and progressive politics while not really changing things that in practice help people's lives. For me personally, I just see it as a far more cynical, far more sinister, like, no, man, you know what's fine? The established order. Don't worry your little head about it. People who are powerful will do the good thing eventually. Just give them the benefit of the doubt. And that just doesn't cut the mustard for me when it's like, all right, guys, we just announced a couple weeks ago that, like, now you can have earrings and wear tattoos if you're a cast member of the Walt Disney Parks, but we still won't pay you a living wage and we'll still leave you laid off while we pay out our executive bonuses. So enjoy your freedom of expression, you fucking worthless shits. So, like, yeah, this is the part where I'm like, hey, fuck you, Bob Chapek. Fuck you, every single person on the board of the Walt Disney Company. You'll replace Splash Mountain with a Princess and the Frog attraction for sensitivity reasons, but you also will ensure that year over year, the number of black people that will be able to attend your theme parks will approach zero as the cost continues to increase, like, deep into the three-digit range for, like, a single day's park ticket. Like, I have come close to the end of my rope with their, like...
Everything.
Their portrayal of, like, oh, look what a good fucking progressive company they are versus, in practice, what they fucking do to the people on their payroll. That's it. That's my piece. Throw a brick.
Dustin, I need the soapbox back. Can I have it?
Sure.
Those are valid points, and we often forget that, you know, these are all being presented to us by a megalomaniacal corporation, but, like, I try to just separate myself from that. And just
don't worry, guys.
Yeah.
The end of the day, I would always prefer that a company says the right thing and does the wrong thing than does the wrong thing and also says the wrong thing.
Right.
Sociology applies here. The more people say that shit isn't right, the more society will think shit isn't right, the closer we get to shit being corrected. And even if Disney's doing the right thing, even like 10% of the time, I would still prefer this over the alternative.
Right.
Yeah. And I mean, to everyone's credit, like, Dustin, your perspective of it is definitely a very important thing, but I mean,
sucks.
realistically, it's you're talking about it like if we were in a situation where Disney was one of the very few corporate entities that was problematic in the way that you're explaining, it would be a bigger thing in terms of like the why that or going against what Wade says. But like we're dealing with late stage capitalism here, man.
Sure. Aww. And that, like I said, that's the thing, if anything, that like on some level it makes it more sinister to me. Like that's the part that really sticks in my craw, honestly, is like no one has ever thought that ExxonMobil has anyone's best interests other than ExxonMobil and its shareholders, but Disney gets to straddle this super fine line of public goodwill, being like, look at all the fun times we bring you. Look at all the entertaining products we create that you have an emotional investment in.
Don't worry, Dustin. We'll see in 3 years when Mickey Mouse's copyright goes up what the fuck they're going to do.
I heard you talking about that earlier. Yeah. And I'm not exempt to it.
2024, let's go!
I watched all of this series. I consume a lot of Disney products. Mm-hmm. I like going to the theme parks when I have the chance to do so. But I would like it even more if they weren't built on the backs of people who are suffering for late stage capitalism reasons.
Yeah. But it's such a fucking.
But yeah, like I said, that's just for me. It's
a rock
level,
and a hard place, man.
Yeah, it is for real. And yeah. Like I said, I'm not telling people to not. I do want people to think about this shit for sure. And at the end of the day, like I said, I still watch Disney movies and TV shows and, you know, go to the theme park sometimes and all that shit.
Can confirm Dustin has mouse ears on right now.
Red overalls, yellow buttons.
Yeah, yep. Well, I mean,
overalls, yellow shoes, and white gloves. That's it.
But what I guess at the end of the day, ew, I'm saying is that
it's a look.
That's the frustrating thing for me. Like in a way that like people can't change ExxonMobil. Like as a consumer, you reasonably cannot change.
There's no like public face.
Yeah, like
to
what
Exxon.
Are you gonna do? Like,
right.
I'm not gonna fill up my car this week. Fuck you, big oil. But like. as a group of people, like, people could collectively force the Walt Disney Company to pay, like, its lowest paying workers a living wage by just saying, like, look, I'm going to cancel my vacations until you rectify the situation.
There's at least, there's more avenues for hurting the Disney Corporation.
Yeah, 100%.
Because they've got their fingers in fucking everything.
And they're just, like, the worst of the video game fandoms in that sense, where they will have a contingent of people that will defend everything they do just because they like the products, which is its own frustrating nightmare of a thing, where just fandoms defend corporations to the hilt. Even though they don't have your best interest at heart, they still might make things you like. They make plenty of things that I like, but at the end of the day, you know, they would put a bullet in you if they could guarantee that two consumers who will spend as much money as you will take your place in a heartbeat, so...
That's accurate.
I think that's, like Brian was saying, like, it just speaks to our society and how late-stage capitalism has infected everything to a degree where, like, that... I don't want to say this doesn't register to me as a problem, but I just feel like there are other more glaring issues that...
And that'll always be true.
I would boycott other companies first.
If I could elaborate on my point for just a second.
No.
The big thing is that, because we have to realize, as in the consumer field of this late-stage capitalist situation that we're in, you ultimately have to make a decision of either you enjoy the luxuries that come with it and enjoy some products that you actually enjoy and abstain from the products made by companies or sold by companies that are the most egregious, so it's either you choose a small section that you avoid and you enjoy your lane as it would be, or you abstain from everything and you live as a hermit, or you enjoy everything and you're kind of excessive.
Yeah,
so it's like, it's you're fucked no matter what you do.
Yay.
It's kind of where it is until some actual change happens. And things are chipping away slowly, but you got to just remember that, like, you can't let some things sully a thing that you enjoy every time, or else you're not going to enjoy anything. There are very few creators that you can hold to a moral standard that is going to be acceptable without boiling over and making it so that, well, there's a fucking human rights violation.
Especially large-scale creators. Like,
yeah.
You have to kind of pick and choose your battles. And at the end of the day, like, I don't think the Walt Disney Corporation is a good entity, but the fact that they're at least saying something that is important and that will improve the world is better than what I expected of them and better than what many of their competitors are doing. So
I'll give it up to that for some degree.
Too much judgment.
And again, I'll give it up to the people who worked on the show for sure. Cause that's the other thing there. We're like the people who signed the checkbooks, they definitely don't care if Falcon and the Winter Soldier is about anything or not. Like, at the end of the day, like, they don't care if it has some kind of social message in any form or not, but you know, the creative people in the trenches do. And so that's the other thing that I always think of is, like, you know, props to everybody who is in the writer's room and the directors of those episodes and the actors for, you know, doing their best to create something that is worth consuming in the face of, you know, irritating corporate bullshit. Anyway.
I brought myself down.
Like, I finally got my dander all the way up and now I'm coming down, so.
Guys, you like it when Zemo danced? I liked it when Zemo danced.
Did he do a Fortnite dance?
Aaron Zemo was a great character.
Aaron Zemo is my favorite character. Even.
I was ready to hate this show on its whole for bringing Zemo back because I liked his arc from Civil War, but the way they used that character was so great.
Yeah,
it was good.
I enjoyed it.
And I think I pretty much liked almost every character and almost every plot line. I agree that the Flag Smasher plot line kind of petered out in a not great way.
It sounded
including
like
Carly.
That was because they had to rewrite it because it had to do with a global plague.
Oh, yeah.
They
couldn't
really keep.
That's very funny.
I don't know what it would have looked like. I remember reading that also.
I will say...
Wait, what?
So they had to rewrite a whole bunch of the script because the original script was revolving around some global plague, which is why in the first episode you see them steal medical supplies, and that never comes back.
Right.
I mean, they kind of like make it look like they're running a hospital later on, so I wonder if that's where they just kind of like, oh, these are other refugees who can't get help otherwise.
That's a clever rewrite, because I just took it as like, oh, medical supplies are a thing refugees would need. Like, that's fine. Sure.
Right. They
dropped a whole episode. They like literally squeezed it into one less episode than they originally planned.
Right.
And they had to rewrite most of it.
Was casted as like a big name actor, and she had a huge role, and then she was a corpse.
Right. She literally
She was going to have the plague, and part of the whole plot was going to be vaccinating her, or trying to, and failing.
Right. The character that Carly was mourning in like the third episode.
Yeah, okay.
That was like a really important character in the initial write. And she had no lines, I think, in the real show.
Maybe that's why that whole subplot.
Right, that's why the flag smashers are as weak as
that. And that's at least part of it. And even more so than that, though, I guess coming back to Zemo, I'm kind of neutral on Zemo, I think, at the end of the day. Like,
oh, man.
Oh, you're so much fun.
In my mind, because I would have liked them, just in terms of how you could spend that screen time, I would have liked them to spend it still just a little differently. And I'm still every time I see anything, I'm just like, tighten it up, really focus in on some shit. I as far as really dumb nitpicky bullshit, I will say the funniest, most pointless moment in the show by far, they're just like, oh, that's just pure Marvel, like, eye-rolling dopery, is when he puts on the ski mask for, like, 2 seconds just to do it, and then he takes it off. I'm like, that's the stupidest fucking thing I've ever seen. What are you guys doing?
Why don't they put it on every poster ever?
They leaned into the comic book shit so hard for this whole show.
And the weirdest
every
thing,
time
the weirdest thing about it is he didn't even wear it for, like, minutes. Like, it was on for, like, one shot, and then he took it back off again. I was like, what are you guys doing?
Stupid, so I'm glad they did.
It was just like, you know, at the end of the show when U.S. Agent, they're like, here's your black outfit.
Here's your black outfit.
Like your comic book character.
Let's call you like U.S. Agent.
Right.
So silly.
On some level, they know the source material they're working with.
But
they're just eating it.
Separate from that, like, I don't think he, especially in like some of those, I don't know, the episode 3 I still think was kind of the weakest, the one where they like... They have their little adventure through Hong Kong or whatever. Yeah,
that was the worst, definitely. It was one too many things
so
going
much
on.
Zemo in it.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think he was kind of in that episode specifically. He was very superfluous. Some of the other stuff that comes later, like the one moment that it really paid off for me with him was where they at least show that he's consistent. He at least shows that he's consistent within his own principles of, like, he is not going to take the super soldier serum. Like, that shit's all strewn around the ground, and he's the one who's like, no, I'm going to stomp each one of these little vials so that nobody can have this shit anymore.
Yeah, that was great.
I really appreciate
the culmination of his arc with Bucky was good, too. I liked the end of it, where he's basically like,
that
Bucky,
was good.
You're a fucking killer, and you're going to kill me. And Bucky's like, nah.
I actually do have a... So I couldn't really hear the interaction between Dormahage. I couldn't hear how they closed that off. Like, I just missed it or whatever. I wasn't fully paying attention.
They took him to the raft.
Yeah, they took him to the raft.
More between her and Bucky. She said something, and I wanted to go and rewatch the episode, but I kept forgetting to do it.
I mean, she told him to stay out of Wakanda for a while.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. She said to Layla.
Like, can you get me a flying suit for my buddy? And then they're like, okay.
Right, yeah. And then she's like, I need one more favor.
I knew,
but you know, it's kind of a big ask at that
point. She said something. She's like, something about the White Wolf. And I was like, did she just tell him like, that he's not that anymore? And then like the scene was over. And I'm just like, I didn't feel like rewinding it.
She was like, the White Wolf should stay out
of
Wakanda.
Right, yeah, right. Okay. She was basically like, you're kind of persona non grata for a while. Like, maybe don't show up for a bit.
Just probably just because he broke him out at all, even though they got more
right.
of him now.
It was
now,
just that, like, here's another thing that, like, this is another pointless...
You committed regicide.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Another pointless observation just about the production stuff of the show, but it's so funny that, like, the fact that they put him in the raft by the end of the series, but, like, initially... They break him out of a facility that looks like it's like a reappropriated like middle school or something.
Right.
It's like, oh man, your TV budget is showing, you guys.
I mean, it had to look crappy so that he could break out.
I guess so. Right. But
he's not getting out of the rap.
And that's a pointless stray observation of, like, I was really impressed in the last episode about when talking about things that were great in it, of, like, they really spent all their, like, shooting budget on episode 6, I guess, because, like, every other fight sequence is just in, like, a series of different warehouses, or perhaps the same warehouse, where they just, like, shuffled around the pipes and the weird shit that's hanging everywhere. Just like
I will say the fight choreography was really impressive. It was much better than I expected.
Yeah, the fights themselves
are
good. It's just,
Sam does a literal shoulder charge. He shoulder charges that guy.
Sure does. Sam especially, I loved the fight choreography for him, because it showed, like, how adept he is both with the shield and with his flight suit.
Yeah, I was gonna say, the wing-shield combo was really good. Like, I loved everything about, like, how natural that was for him.
Yeah, I thought that was awesome.
I do like the function. Yeah, I do like the function of his new outfit a ton. Mm-hmm. more stray stupid bullshit. I think it is interesting that the black Captain America has the whitest Captain America outfit. That's just,
I love that suit. It looks
just
great.
Just an observation. Yeah, it doesn't mean anything.
That's like almost directly from the comics.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like Captain America has specifically been said to have the white symbolized purity in the suits, like that he's a pure person. From what you will.
Yo,
like Falcon is a good, like the purest person in the show, in the MCU, you could argue. And you see that all throughout the last episode. He's extremely against killing people. I loved that he he refused to fight Carly, mm-hmm. and then pretty much everything he did in that episode was just trying to save people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I really, like I said, I have no qualms whatsoever. Good for Anthony Mackie, and what's his name? Is the actor's name of Bucky?
Sebastian Stan.
Yeah, good for those guys. Okay. They both did a really good mm-hmm. job.
They both crushed it.
But also in the first episode, fucking Falcon had no qualms killing a bunch of mooks out while he was doing
those guys are capital T terrorists. They're in a desert, Wade.
Right.
We're French.
Steve Rogers killed Nazis.
That rock landed just fine. He came back. I assume they all did.
There are no confirmed deaths from that scene, but there are confirmed survivals from that scene.
And I will sure say, he exploded one of those helicopters.
And this is separate from
helicopter real hard.
Like, this is where things fall outside of the purview of show and, like, lean back into, like, the purview of things that are happening in the real world that no one can control. I do think it's going to be really interesting going forward. Like, even how much more important than he would have been otherwise, just how much more symbolically important like Anthony Mackie's character is now, that he is, like, definitively both, like, perhaps the highest moral high ground in the MCU, and also, like, one of the, he went from two super strong leading black male characters in the MCU to one, just because we lost fucking Chadwick Boseman to cancer, and that's awful.
Oh yeah,
it's just like, I feel like that role, like, is as big of a shoes they were going to be to fill before then, like the absence of that other really strong character, just due to, you know, the whims of the shitty universe, gonna, like, it's even more on him.
One cool thing that happened, like, just in the last few days, they announced that the Captain America 4 is in production. So
nice. I was just wondering that.
And it's being worked on by the people who made the show, I think.
Okay.
I assume.
Yeah, I think it shares a lot, like, of the same creative people. At the end of the day, I'm all for it. I definitely still liked it way more than, like, my criticisms about it, for sure. Mm-hmm. Like, overall, I think they did a really good job. But
Black Panther 2 is still going to come out, too. So
yeah, right. They're going to do something. It's going to be real weird.
Did they not film anything?
No, they never started.
They never started, okay.
Might have, like, there might have been a universe where they would have, but COVID pushed it back.
Okay, yeah.
So, right.
I knew it was kind of coming up.
They've already said they're not going to reuse footage of Chadwick Boseman from previous projects.
Okay.
Like, he's not. Yeah, they don't want
to found footage.
Right. Yeah, and don't do that. Don't try to make a CG version of them. Just find a way to acknowledge that this horrible thing happened in universe, and you know,
more respectful than the Oscars did for him.
Well, that was
Wait,
did you guys see that?
I didn't watch this. I don't know what this is about.
It's just go ahead.
So, if any of you are familiar with NFTs, it's this terrible new art,
the holograms.
It's non-fungible tokens
thing that's basically Bitcoin for art.
Oh, yeah.
No, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's fucking awful.
Some dude stole someone's, like, $50 head model of Chadwick Boseman and sold it to the Oscars, like, illegally to be used as this big donation piece for them to raise money. And, like, it's worth, like, $1.2 million right now, and it's got this terrible gold sheen, and they set up the entire Oscars around the presumption that he was going to win Best Actor, and, like, saved that event for last, and he didn't win.
Yeah! And, like, you should watch the YouTube clip of it, because it's so awkward, because I didn't watch the Oscars, but I watched that section after the fact, after hearing about this, because Wade's totally right.
That he didn't win. I mean, that's horrible.
They reconstructed, like, the whole show under the assumption that that was going to be their, like, closer, and it would have been, like a really strong, like, single-person in memoriam. Right, in addition to the regular one that they do. And the thing that happened is that Anthony Hopkins won for a different movie. And they were so sure that he was going to win that they didn't even, like, they didn't have, Anthony Hopkins wasn't there, they didn't plan to, like, call him in, so they just, like, put up a static picture of Anthony Hopkins on the screen, and then the Oscars are over. It was the weirdest, most awkward shit ever.
Oh my God.
Why didn't he win?
Ask the Academy.
All right.
At the end of the day, so as someone else pointed out, like, there is no more obvious and clear proof that the production team has no
they don't have they don't know actually yeah. they don't actually
right
know
the
results
beforehand.
Right.
How, oh my how, lord.
Man, like this is just like Hall of Fame and any sort of voting that happens behind the scenes. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, it was
you idiot.
Anyway, yeah, that's a weird thing that happened.
Oh my gosh. What else? What was I going to say?
Oh, the last thing I was actually going to say about the Zemo stuff. Like I said, he has a couple good moments in there, but in my mind of reorganizing of just, like, if you have a finite amount of screen time and how and different ways that you could spend it, I would have liked to see more of the characters that I really felt, like, strongly about that were super side characters. Like, I could have stood for, like, if you could have taken out Zemo and, like, put in, like, I don't know, a flashback that shows, like, a little bit of what Isaiah went through in the Korean War or whatever, I would have taken that. If you could have taken some of that stuff out and give us, like... Like, the thing that I wanted with Carly more than anything personally was I wanted her to have a, in hindsight, I wanted her to have either, like, a scene that's kind of like the, that Monica Rambeau sequence from, WandaVision, where, like, they show directly kind of what...
Her snapping back.
Right, yeah, part of her direct consequences, too, when the blip happens or whatever. Or, like, all the way into, like, something up to as indicative of a character as, like, the fucking opening of every X-Men movie that, like, the first time they did it was amazing, and then every time they've done it since, like, the fourth or fifth time, it really loses its power, is when, like, they show Magneto in the concentration camp as a child or whatever. Like, I wanted her to have that sequence where I wanted to show, like, this is how, here's in, like, one, like, 30-second scene, how you made this character. Like, what this is how she came upon her, like, modus operandi. This is what made her into the person that she is now.
I assume that was going to be touched on.
And yeah, maybe,
with
right,
Mama
you're
Tanya.
Totally right. Yeah. Maybe some of that was in the stuff that they had to cut for.
Yeah. The only thing I can say... Go ahead.
To your larger point, I totally disagree. I loved Zemo. Zemo was great.
Yeah, you're right about the flag smash and stuff.
He's fine. Like I said, I don't have any problem with him. It's just that, like, he's, for me, he was more of a nod to things that have happened before. And
but,
I, like, I'm in the now, man. I'm in
Dustin, to your point, like, if anyone else has a lot to do with super soldiers, it's really him, though.
Yeah, that's
like,
fine.
He's got such a reason to be involved. Like, I could have standed, like, more of what you were saying, and maybe less of Sharon in that regard because of how
that was the other thing about her
like,
character is
have been killed off. It was Sharon.
Yeah, even any right. I totally agree with you there. If I were
in the show,
if I were to cut them in any order, it would have been Sharon first, and then the Zemo
or, like,
stuff.
Her,
if you had to make cut something to, like, make room for something else,
her but slightly less because like because I don't mind. I still don't mind her being there. Like, I like that there was fallout for what she chose to do in Civil War. In like, because she fell off the earth after that.
In episode 3, I still think my favorite action sequence might have been her killing people in the fucking badass in that shipping yard.
A good sequence, but it didn't really make sense.
It didn't add anything to the show in a narrative sense, but it was cool to watch.
Especially if she is actually the power broker, at which point that scene makes killing way less sense.
Yeah.
Thugs? I don't know.
They'd already established that she was after these people, so.
Wouldn't they have known? Did people not know who? Whatever. But, like, I understand, like, when they started kind of hinting at Zemo, I was like, no. And then they showed him, like, oh my god, they're going there. Like, because I kind of assumed, like, the way that Civil War ended with him, like, I was like, we're never going to see this guy again. Like, he's, like, gone. But the fact that they needed him for this and were able to, like, kind of reach an understanding and then also still, like, basically get him to justice for all the shit that he did while using him the entire time, like, it was interesting. Like, there were so many chances I saw for him to, like, just go around and, like a hand-wringing villain, like, oh, I'm gonna get these two because why not? But he really did, like, he played his part. He was very much, like you said, with the super soldier serum, like, he was very to his morals the whole way through. He never sabotaged them. Like, he just kind of, like, got away from the law for a while, but they got him back.
Ultimately, I don't even think his goal was ever to escape the law long term.
He just
wanted to stop this thing and then go back to jail. Like, he allowed himself to be captured at the end by going exactly where he told.
He mentioned the memoriam, and he was at the memoriam.
He tried to kill himself at the end of Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He was sort of doing the same thing here.
Yeah. And now that I think about it,
he's done.
Now that I think about it more in terms of, like, weird rewrites or editing decisions or whatever, like, and how, like, kind of goofy and sort of pointless the Sharon thing is. Like, I'm thinking, even if you had to get there, like, if you're determined to get her into the future of the MCU in that role as, like, an antagonist of some sort, like, I feel like you could cut everything that she did in this last episode and still leave the post-credits thing, and it functions basically the exact same way.
Agreed.
She had to show up in that last episode because she's, you know, a sub-actor from the show, or supporting actress.
Mm-hmm.
She had to be there because she's in the show.
I wouldn't have even minded if, like, all of the, like, if they'd cut all that quippiness and just have her show up at that final confrontation, like, I feel like that could have been a little bit more.
Roll in with the gun drawn.
That would work better.
As a power broker, as a fucking mafia boss, you don't show up in the action. That's not what you do.
Sure, right. Yeah, right, 100%.
Like, her showing up, the criminal, we still don't know where he fell in. I don't know if he was, like, a guy from More Things or not. The guy who wanted to kill Sam.
Random thug dude. Grenade launcher or whatever.
Like, a semi-recurring character.
Sure.
Yeah, that dude's just too generic. Whoever that actor is, I feel bad for that guy, because it's like, light-skinned thug, and he's like, I'm trying out for that. Like, that's me.
But if she had shown up, that guy recognizes her, and then there was that moment of, like, Carly, like, oh, shit.
Sure.
Like,
Like, in my mind, in the writing room, I can see how they backed their way into that. They're like, well, we got to get her on American soil so she can end up in this Senate subcommittee hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And so the way that they do that is she just shows up.
Yeah. I think it would have been a more powerful move if it was just that final scene. Like, not her and Bucky having a fun time or whatever.
Just get her in
Mandragore or whatever the fuck it's called. I don't care.
Manticore.
Yep, that's the one.
It's got the head of
Mahjong,
a lion.
And, like, they see her there and then just kind of, like, don't hear from her again. And they hear all these rumblings about the power broker, and they see, like Carly's still getting the threats or whatever, and they hear that something's happening. And then she shows up, and then that revelation is like, oh, you've really been, like, you've been sending your thugs out. You've been, like, using your power, to like, track these people down, as opposed to, like, playing both sides, kind of, in a weird way.
And by the end of that episode, like, it's episode 3, where they, like, they get through that episode, and they say the power broker, like, 15 times.
And I laugh because
they don't tell you who it is, and at that point, you're like, well, at least at that point, I was like, all right, the power broker is either definitely a character that's been on screen in this episode, or it's definitely a character that we've never seen before that is just some reference to the comic book canon that's just going to show up in a post-credit sequence. But I was just like, But and I was like, here's a mystery, and I don't give a shit about it. I just don't care. Yeah. Like, even whether it had been her or some other thing, I was like, I just don't. It doesn't matter to me.
Right. At the end of the day, I would have far preferred if they had taken Madripoor out. Like,
that would have been totally fine. There
didn't need to exist. Right. Yeah.
You could have kept it as like investigating how the serum came in, and then also put a stop to it. But
sure, but they could have put that in America or even
it could have been literally anywhere.
Right. Madripoor didn't need to exist. It was there to be like a weird hub that introduces the power broker. But once you take the power broker out of the equation, that whole scene or that whole endeavor becomes a pointless nothing.
Yeah, and again, go ahead.
I was going to say, I'm going to channel Dustin and say that the Madripoor is a place they wanted to introduce for future use.
Probably. Yeah. Like, I could believe it. I mean, if she's a power broker and she's going to be a bigger player, like, of course they're going to go back there.
Yeah,
and it's a really famous comic book location.
Mm-hmm. How heavy-handed?
It comes up a lot. It's a big... Mm-hmm.
How heavy-handed do you think, like, by the time we get to Latveria, how heavy-handed do you think that introduction is going to be when it eventually shows up?
I thought that the first name drop was going to be in this show.
Yeah.
And then they said Latvia instead.
That's right. But anyway, the other thing I was going to say about that is, like, you're totally right that that's just table setting. Like, that. Mm-hmm. All right, well, something important is going to happen here at some point, so
the
we're telling you about it now.
The Mandragora goes to the right of the power broker.
But beyond that, like, again, if you wanted to, like, script doctor this a little bit and rearrange some shit, I feel like it's even better if you have, like...
A soup spoon.
If the origin of the serum is just, like... some one or more put upon people in one of these camps that, like, I was a scientist and then now they fucked me up and I scraped together just enough resources to get all this shit going to, you know, make some justice in the world or whatever. Like, there's any number of ways you could rewrite that to just,
I think that's much better than the power broker existing at all.
Yeah.
Or at least existing in this context, if that's like a bigger character.
Yeah, and again, like I said, if this show has one big failing for me, it is that. It's just that, like, that all that little stuff, thank goodness it doesn't detract so much that, like, the core characters get, like, a really nice solid arc. And,
I wish it hadn't had so many little hooks in it for the future.
Right, all that stuff.
Like,
just
strings leading off into the abyss because we're not there yet.
Yeah, that time just could have been spent better. And you can still do most of those nods without giving them as much time as they got.
I feel like if they just mentioned the power broker and had it not even really be a character, it would have been
I
think it would have been better.
Because the thing, like, if you call that a character out once or twice, then it is a thing that, like, the next time it comes up in the next show or the next movie, you're like, oh yeah, I kind of remember that, or, you know, you'll go Google it and read the article about Easter eggs that were about this thing in the previous Simpsons.
Because, like,
whatever.
What if they had even just name-dropped that, and then Sharon just maybe... came with them, like, she was just there the whole time, as opposed to being like a sort of there, sort of not.
The fact that they keep tilting the hat at it so often, like, I think inherently makes it tiresome. All right, you guys are clearly just, like, really jabbing at us that you're setting up this thing and there's going to be a reveal in a couple episodes, and, like, whatever.
Ham-fisted.
In the comics, the power broker is the source of both, like, wider spread superpowers for more normal people, sort of like the Flag Smashers had, and also specifically U.S. agents' superpowers.
Okay.
So I'm guessing that's why they shoved it in. But, it didn't need all the screen time it got.
Yeah, and back to the John Walker thing, in terms of just, like, tightening stuff up again, I still could have been, I would have been fine if they cut his last scene... where he got the outfit, I would have just, like, put that in the next show and just do the one where she gives him the business card. Like, that's a good enough nod for the next thing.
It was implied,
where he puts on the black suit.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
I was
make
fine
that,
with it.
Yeah,
I could take it either way.
Right, exactly.
But the kind of sequence we got was pointless. We already know she's a bad guy.
Yeah, right.
Sort of.
Here she is being even more bad, kind of.
Yeah.
No soup for her.
She's amoral, I would say.
Right. So my last piece on John Walker, and I don't want to say that this is why you feel the way that you do, but I think it contributes at least a little. John Walker, despite not being the main antagonist and not having done the worst stuff in that show, is sort of billed as the main antagonist and the guy who's done the worst stuff in that show. And to the point of Sam and Bucky not, like, vilifying him, he wasn't ever their antagonist. The only, like, they thought he was a nuisance, But the only time that they fought him was because when they thought he was emotionally compromised and
crossed the line.
Right, when he crossed a line, but like he wasn't their villain. He was never their villain. And I think the show did an okay job. Like they were fine to bring him back in a non-antagonistic way in the last episode because he wasn't supposed to be their villain. And like they never saw him that way.
That's a good point. Like that first time when they all meet each other on top of the vans or whatever, like they kind of had the same back and forth relationship that they ultimately ended up having.
Right. He's a nuisance, but he's helping out or trying.
Well, and I think part of it is still, like, I totally get that. I think I still like just feel a little bit differently to some extent because they don't have like a throwing hands level of enmity until, you know, he straight up kills a guy in the street. But there is like a slow gradual build of just like, like he goes he goes from like extending a hand and being like, hey, you guys should join my team to like, hey, you guys should really join my team. Cause they gave me the thing and I'm the I'm in charge. So right. Because the government said so, get in line. He's not going to fight them at any point, like, you know, in terms of being on the outs with them. But he clearly feels entitled to their,
desperate to have
them as sidekicks because he's Captain America now.
He needs that validation.
And I think to that point, Bucky being like, Lincoln, really? Like, Bucky sees him as, like, a fuckwad. Bucky doesn't give a shit about him. And that's I think, a good crystallization of their relationship in that Walker thinks he's more important than he is, and Bucky knows he's not.
Uh-huh. I was going to say to what Dustin just said, I did actually get the impression that he was kind of planning to fight them, because their last interaction before they fought, the last thing he said was, stay out of my way.
Yeah.
Like I said, that's the thing. And like, I think that's the thing about it is like, over the course of those episodes, it's just one of those things where like I do feel like they do a really good job of like turning up that tension a few degrees at a time over like 4 or 5 episodes worth of content, and then just to have it deflate like a balloon for me. Like I said, I don't know.
They took the pan completely off the gas.
Yeah.
Like,
I
think that fight where they just beat him up and take his shield was supposed to be, you know, the culmination of that.
That was the climax of their scene. And Walker, by the end of that and the end of his Inquisition, was like not deflated himself, but he kind of knew his place in that. Like he didn't feel like he had the authority to try and step on other people's toes at that point.
Maybe that's because, you know, since he was stripped of his title, he didn't feel like he had to go out and prove himself anymore.
See,
You know what I wish? I wish he had been with Sam in that final confrontation with Carly as opposed to just chilling with Bucky.
That would have been better.
Made a much more interesting
how it is.
Like,
I think they didn't have quite enough Walker in the last episode. He just kind of shows up.
All right, I'm pointing at Lorraine with intent.
Yeah, he's really pointing at me right now.
You want to talk about rewrites? You want to talk about getting Sharon out of here? Have him put a bullet in Carly to kill her. Like, come on, let's go.
Or, counterpoint,
I would be fine with that.
Counterpoint, he's ready to do it, and then maybe, like, last second has like some of that, like the way that he went to save that truck, like he had that moment of clarity. Mm-hmm. Maybe he has that, lowers the gun, Sharon does it anyway, like to kind of help solidify. He would have had a more complete and better feeling arc if he had been there, if he had hunted down Carly with Sam, as opposed to like whatever the fuck he was doing out there.
Well, Tabit, what are your thoughts?
Both of them point a gun at Carly. It goes to black. You hear a siren and a hand cannon.
Gunshot!
And the viewer gets to decide.
How's your sister?
Dude.
All right, then.
The last thing I'll say on that is, to me, like I said, I feel like this is in the text, or at least that's definitely the way I read it, is like coming into this last episode, because it's either the end... The last thing before the credits and last thing after the credits is when he's in the garage, right? Like hammering out his own shield.
Yeah, that was a post-credits, I believe.
Sixth episode, yeah.
Yeah, for me, that totally reads as like that might as well be him like pulling pictures of Steve Rogers out of magazines and like paper macheing them onto his own face. Like, no, I am Captain America, me.
See,
like I was like, I agree. He's at his most unhinged right now. Not like that, but the pressure is off.
I agree with that.
I've got so here. Go ahead, Phil.
I was gonna say that to what I'm guessing you were getting at with that. I feel like he still thought of himself as Captain America. And then, like, halfway through the last episode, he kind of realized he's not when he saw all the shit Falcon was doing.
Yeah, but, like, on a dime.
Because, see, that's where...
I mean...
I feel like if we could... He would, like, say he's, like... It's him, Sam, and Carly or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And they're going at it. He's, like, at his most unhinged. And, like, maybe he's going in for the killing blow and, like, it gets sniped from him. Like, he's ready to get revenge for Lamar. He's ready to, like... close this chapter in his book, and he doesn't get it, but he's also been listening to Sam that whole time, or Sam like talks him down or something like that. Like I feel like there should have been some way, like that triangle I feel like was too important and they just kind of ignored it a little bit. Like
Sam talking down Walker would have been a good scene.
Yeah, like, I mean, yeah, like he's cool. Ready for it. He is like,
I mean, how many talking down scenes does he need in this show?
All of them.
But he's good
all
at them.
Them.
He's so good at it.
Right.
Like
yeah.
He like yeah. He helps them, like he's like, hey, like I like he brings up that anecdote about like how he lost his wingman like right in front of his face and there was nothing he could do. Like he empathizes with him and gets Walker to empathize. And then Carly still just gets killed, and like, I don't know. I feel like that could have. I feel like that would have been more satisfying for me.
Yeah, I like any of those ideas. And kind of like, just so we're not totally cul-de-sacked into here and keep looping back to it. The other thing I'll throw back out there, which I try to give this disclaimer whenever we have, you know, hearty back and forths on stuff like this.
We hearty.
Like I don't. It's fine if. Any or all of you guys or anyone out there listening has a different opinion than my opinion, because my opinion is my opinion.
Yeah.
Like, it's not... I'm not saying it is the opinion. I'm saying it's my opinion.
No, if we disagree, you are John Walker.
Your opinion is wrong. Which is good, because John Walker is a good guy.
Right. Wade is in his basement making a shield right now.
That's right.
Clang, clang.
Whenever you don't hear Wade talking, he's just going...
He's taking pictures of Dustin and paper macheing them to his face.
Oh my gosh.
I am the world champion.
It's a cute, neat thing that is pointed out online, but that scene is a culmination of what they've been trying to do with the MCU up until this point. They've been slowly, subtly trying to build this symbolic reversal of where the MCU started, and that scene is meant to be a total reverse mirror of Iron Man building his suit in the cave, and it's supposed to suggest that like things are upside down now, good is bad, bad is good, and things are weird.
The moral gray area thing.
Yeah, I mean the whole show was morally gray, like almost
every
the whole
turn.
Time. Like the Flag Smashers weren't really villains, and maybe even were right in the end. Like they sort of got what they wanted.
She killed people for no reason.
Also, she was just
she
had to make her into a mustache twirling villain so that you didn't feel bad when Sharon Carter killed her for no reason.
Enough of one. But also, like Sharon Carter is no longer a hero, and John Walker is. I guess a little bit of a hero, and like Baron Zemo is a really principled guy, and like most of the characters in this show feel like they ended up being not completely caricatures of good or evil.
Right,
and again,
including Carly.
Yeah, right. Oh, 1000%. And the thing I still like about like I said, some of the stuff that like, man, am I glad that they did come back around. Like I said, either the number of times that they did, or I could have even stood for a little more of it, but like, the fact that they loop back to Isaiah's thing is just so good. Man, I really dug all that stuff.
I mean, he's, like, he might be my favorite character in the show.
Oh, and, like, when you're talking about real shit, like, a veteran of color who has been abused by the state is literally just American history. Mm-hmm. Like, that's literally just shit that has happened in this country multiple times over.
Yeah.
So,
And he even alluded to, other instances of the government doing that to
real world history. Yeah,
in real history, yeah. Right.
And that conversation, like I said, if my favorite moment in the series isn't Bucky and Sam, it's Sam and him that second time.
Yeah, when he brings
the shield,
yeah,
and he's right. Like, I don't want to see that fucking thing. Mm-hmm. Like, what a great scene. Oh my god. Yeah, just really, really good.
Oh.
Yeah. And that one, like I said, that's like, his interactions with him are the parts of the, are the moments where they touch on that stuff that works so well for me in contrast to the other one where he's out in the street or whatever, because especially that second one where they're having the heart-to-heart about him thinking about wanting to be Captain America.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they are literally just having a personal conversation about, like, what it is like to be a black man and be expected to sacrifice for a country that more often than not
will sacrifice
right,
you.
Yeah, is right. At best indifferent to your suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Just, yeah. Whole lot.
But those conversations were so powerful, even, you know, from our limited perspective as a group of white people.
Yeah, yeah. Right, 100%. Yeah. And even though the other end thing where he gets his own wing in the Captain America Museum is schmaltzy in its own way, like, that scene works for me. I was like, oh, man,
me too.
That's great. 100%. That's like, Jesus. Yeah.
Like, I almost teared up a little
bit.
Yeah,
that's scene. Like where my, that's where I was at emotionally. Yeah, I was like, oh, almost. Man, gosh.
I'm just protecting my ego here.
Give him a hug after being such a hard case the whole show.
Right after, they were like, does he ever lighten up? And the kid was like, no.
Yeah, yeah. And for being absolutely like a, you know, a supporting character and not part of the main cast, that I should look up whoever the actor is who played Isaiah, because he acted the shit out of the scenes that he was in, man. God damn.
He killed it. He crushed it.
Lorraine's gonna find it.
The acting in the show across the board was incredible. Like, I thought John Walker's actor was amazing.
Yeah, I think he did a good job.
He was great. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Mackie and Sebastian.
Carl Lumbly.
Yeah, Carl Lumbly.
Okay. Good for him. Goddamn.
Guys, there's a character that we haven't even discussed that I want to know how everyone feels about.
Is it Julia Louis-Dreyfus?
Yes.
I love her.
I mean, I don't
kind of agree.
I don't think I give a shit about that character, but I like Julie Louis-Dreyfus a lot. So
my position was she was greasy as shit, but like I loved her for what her character was supposed to be.
And it's all just going to be set up for things that happen other shows.
Oh, and again, she's like the other
theory, the next phase of these TV shows.
Marvel's version of Suicide Squad.
That's 100% what I was going to say. That I think also is one more like little part of my read on John Walker and the turn he takes at the end of that other episode. Because both the prior interaction before that and the interaction at the end, like, nothing about her is like on the level. Like, this is clearly some like Black Ops shit. Like, she's not hiring him to do good, like, for the good of mankind or whatever. Like,
I'm not coming here to pray, sweetie.
Guy needs a job, all
right? Yeah, right. Yeah, he just lost his benefits. Like,
you need to care.
Anyway, speaking of his acting, though, like, him, that was a really good moment, too, like, that I didn't even think about it until you just brought him up specifically, but when he's getting dressed down and losing his title or whatever in that hearing, like, that was a great little sequence, like, he did a really good job in there.
Yeah. Yeah, I loved that scene. Especially when he's like, do you have any idea the shit you've made me do?
Yeah,
yeah, right, because it totally brings his struggle full circle of, like, yeah, he is somewhat culpable for the heinous shit that he has done, but also the people in power are, because they sent him out.
Yeah, they pointed
like, oh,
him
you're fine.
There.
You know, get out there and fight, even though you're clearly damaged.
They pulled the trigger and made him do it, and they're just, like, washing their hands completely of everything.
Right, and he even more or less said, I think almost exactly, like, you had no problem with me doing things like this when I was overseas and there weren't cameras on me. You wanted me to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was a great little moment.
It was nice of them to use the same senator for that hearing and then the GRC
know,
stuff
right?
later.
And the
same room that was, like, I don't know, the second floor room of the Four Seasons.
Right.
Look, man, it's a TV show.
At least they got the right Four Seasons.
They
It was, it
and
wasn't
they
total
did film
landscaping.
It in a real, they filmed it in a real courthouse. I read that wasn't a set.
They couldn't afford to build
a set. The Madame Hydra character, the Contessa, was very ham-fisted and didn't definitely really fit into the show very well. Like, it just felt really awkward.
It
just
felt
she
like...
overacted that to as much as she could.
Oh yeah, right. she did.
It felt
but
like
I'm
they were trying
other
to.
People were excited.
I felt like they were trying to build off the Agatha stuff from like WandaVision a little bit, because she was so like her over the top turn like had a certain cadence to it, and it felt like they were trying to build off that energy in like a different way. I don't know. I kind
of
didn't like
it. I could see that, but it also totally didn't work because of how little screen time she had and also how little power her character has.
Well, yeah, supposedly you take the meaning that it's an important character and we don't see her until the second last episode, and she has two scenes to dawdle.
Yeah, it's a very classic, like, they told us that she's important, but they did not show us that she's important.
That could have been a post-credit scene, too.
Yeah.
Like, maybe should have been.
It's like Dustin was saying earlier, like, maybe it's just a business card, and that's literally all you see of her.
I would have loved just that.
You could have condensed those into one scene either way. And in the comics, she's basically, like, anti-hero Nick Fury, and she makes, I think, the Thunderbolts. I'm not 100%.
Yeah, or
the Thunderbolts makers.
Yeah, depending on the continuity you're reading.
Because General Thunderbolt... is the guy who makes Thunderbolts.
Cute.
Right, yeah. And those are villains that are literally taken from the raft and made into the team. So, like, it's going to be Baron Zemo and U.S. Agent. And
to be clear, the General Ross has been in these movies since the Hulk. Like, he's in the
He's literally the oldest character in the MCU.
That is correct.
The same actor, even.
Yeah, he's the oldest actor in the MCU.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah.
Interesting.
It also has Norman Osborn in it, so let's make sure we get Norman Osborn on this team.
And Venom.
I mean, maybe.
And after there's a version with Venom.
Great.
Oh, boy.
I mean, there's a lot of characters that go into that.
The Green Goblin, aren't they?
No. I mean, both of those people, like those actors, might be in the next Spider-Man movie. So, like Alfred Molina said, he was in. Like, if they pick up the phone, he said he'll answer. So, I don't know.
I'm trying real hard not to read much about it, because every time I see something, I'm like, wow, this movie has like 800 characters in it.
Right.
I'm a little I'm kind of like, I do not envy the people who are whoever's trying to put that movie together. Because, like, fucking Into the Spider-Verse is probably one of my top 10 movies of the last, like, 20 years. So, like, the fact that they're leaning into that and they're just going to be like, we're just going to do it again, sort of, but live action. Like, I don't know, man. You guys are really asking for it.
And the dipping into content that has not aged well.
I think there are things to be liked about those Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies, but they do not, like, they're of a time.
Right. But even worse, like, the Amazing Universe, nobody has liked those.
Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah, like, who's excited by the prospect of Jamie Foxx coming back as that version of fucking, Electro or whatever,
I actually liked Garfield's Spider-Man. I thought
I also like Garfield as Spider-Man.
I think he's okay.
We had the chart, didn't we? It was Tobey Maguire is Peter Parker, and Andrew Garfield is Spider-Man.
I think he's too awkward.
But
Tobey Maguire is too much of a loser to be Peter Parker.
He's too cringe. Absolutely. Cancel him.
I mean, they played that up.
He was Seabiscuit Wade.
I think Tom Holland is the perfect Spider-Man.
Yes,
he's a little bit of a loser, but he's not.
Was that Tobey Maguire was, 28 playing a 19-year-old.
Yeah, that's true.
Right, yeah.
They made a ton of mistakes with that movie, but at the end of the day, I think Andrew Garfield was the best Spider-Man, but I think Tom Holland is the best combination of those two. And I don't think we've had an especially great Peter Parker aside from Tom Holland.
Right, guys, do you want to hear the stupidest ever sociological theory about Spider-Man?
Yes.
All right.
I
think each of those Spider-Men in the films are a product of their spider environment. Of like, Tobey Maguire Spider-Man is even more of a loser because those movies stick so much to like the really old comics from the 60s or whatever.
Right.
Where in that era, you're a nerd who has horn-rimmed glasses and you get shoved into lockers because you're a fucking dork. by right. the captain of the football team. And Tom Holland Spider-Man lives in, like, today times where, like, oh, being a nerd is kind of cool. Like, it's not, like, cool. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not, like, cool you're getting laid cool. But it's, like, cool that, like, people, like, your teachers people like you. And like, right. And, like, you have friends and shit. Like, you're not ostracized. You're just, like, you know... You're just a dude.
And that's why that character works so well.
Right. Because he's accurate to the right. time.
You're right.
And Andrew Garfield was none of those things. He was just like, let's make him a skateboarder.
Yeah, right. Yeah, he was right. He was the hot topic of Spider-Man.
Underlined.
Like, if Spider-Man had a wallet chain, it would be that Spider-Man.
Man, you... Oh, man. It's funny, because, like, one of my favorite characters from the new Spider-Man movies... is the teacher that's played by Martin Starr, in no small part because I just love Martin Starr. Uh-huh. He's so good.
I will say that if
he's great.
If you pointed out all of those different versions of the Spider-Man costume, and you asked me like which one of these could Tim Burton have had notes on, it would definitely be the Garfield one.
Yeah,
that's true. Right.
Which, like,
are you sure not the Tobey Maguire one?
I mean, at some degree, like, I guess they were like...
Well, it would have been Spider-Man 3, I think, would have been the one.
They were just that. Like... Well, just like how long the logo is. Like, I think it was just because his torso was really long, but, like, I don't know.
It's got like, very distinct accents, which is something that Tim Burton would do.
Yeah, very Burton-y.
Burton-esque.
But anyway, yeah. Those are my theories on Spider-Man.
Are we going to talk about WandaVision at all? I know we probably won't elaborate anywhere near as much as...
I don't think so, honestly, just because we've gone so long. Like, I'm not saying we never should, because I still honestly wanted to rewatch it, and I just never got around to it,
unfortunately.
About WandaVision that I do about Captain America and Winter Soldier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think we'll kick that down the road for another time, perhaps.
If we're going to kick that, I have a question.
No. Okay.
Now, I haven't seen it yet, but who's watched the Shang-Chi trailer?
I have.
I saw it.
I have.
Who's excited for Shang-Chi?
It looks fun.
A 6.5, maybe a 7.
I'm pretty fucking excited.
I'm going to give you the answer that I have given to my writer friends online about everything that the MCU has encapsulated for me. I'm not excited about Shang-Chi at all. I'm excited about this show because it's going to make me care about something that I previously didn't care about.
All
right. Well, wait. All right. Now
that's
you guys
what
need
the MCU does.
Now you guys need to answer a question for me. Is it a show or I thought it was a movie.
Yeah, I thought it's a movie. Movie.
Yeah, it's a feature. Yeah, like it might even come out in a theater. Who knows?
Those exist.
So Shang-Chi is like, I love Shang-Chi, and I'm just curious how he's going to be presented. Is really my big thing, which is often my position when dealing with anything from the MCU. Is
and I'm like,
except it won't suck.
I don't know I don't know shit about Shang-Chi. When I watched that trailer, I was like, I like kung fu movies, and this looks well choreographed. Sure, right. Let's go.
Bing bang.
Shang-Chi is the most skilled human.
So he's a Krillin.
Yeah.
Right. Wait.
Sure.
Oh, never mind. I'm going to point out something. I didn't know this until recently, but it is actually pronounced Shang-Chi.
Okay.
And I have been mispronouncing it my entire life, so that is not meant to shame anyone.
That's fair.
Shang-Chi?
Fair.
Did you ever say it in the movie at any point?
I don't know what you're talking about,
in the
Phil.
Trailer?
Legend
I
of,
don't think they say it in the trailer.
Legend of Cage is my favorite Super Nintendo game, okay? So don't fuck with me on this, all right?
Fair enough.
I had a conversation with someone today about the Rayquaza pronunciation, and I'm digging my heels in and will say Quaza till I fucking die.
At least that is a totally made up word.
Right, yeah, it's not like based in reality. It's a fabrication.
It's like
two days ago, I got to link the clown Quaza picture to someone because we were talking about Rayquaza. So,
should it be clown Quaza?
Maybe.
The actual name of the picture is Ray Clownza, which is incorrect as far as I'm concerned.
I hate that so much.
That's incorrect.
It's so much worse.
It's very incorrect. That's a no from me.
Oh my gosh. Yeah,
categorically wrong.
Uh-huh. On every level. There's no redemption.
I think it's... Oh, nice.
Yes.
I'll say it's interesting they're revisiting the Mandarin. I think they went out of their way not to use him because he's such a ridiculous caricature in a problematic way. But I think there was such a public outcry for
about
what they did to the character.
Yeah.
Right. that now they're going to try to find a more sensitive way to introduce him. So I'm looking
now
forward
we can
to
have,
what
like,
they do.
A movie about 10 magic rings and not have it be ridiculous.
Okay, see, I didn't even. I saw the trailer, and I don't know if I like wasn't paying as much attention as I should have, but I didn't even know the Mandarin was in it. I was just like, oh, it's Zuko from Avatar when he wore that mask. Okay, that's fine.
Oh, the blue spirit. Let's go.
Yeah, he's the main antagonist of the movie, and okay. He's Shang-Chi's father, which is like not really canonical, but it's half canonical.
I didn't know that.
They combined the Mandarin with what's his
Some
name?
Other character.
Ryan would know if he was here. Shang-Chi's the actual father, Fu Manchu.
Oh no! Don't! Is that real? Oh man!
Is it the dragon?
No, that's a different character.
The dragon of the West.
Feng Foom, correct.
Oh, here we go.
I will say that
lurking in the back of my mind. That was the one thing after I watched that trailer. I was like, in a time where Asian Americans and Asian people in general are having to deal with enough shit, watch yourselves, Disney. That's all I'm saying.
I'm
very much under the impression that this is going to be sort of like Falcon, like a show about that topic, not just or a movie about that topic.
Oh, like
not
an
just,
idea,
they're
like
not gonna ignore it.
Yeah, I have no idea. I have no idea who the creative people are behind this, but hopefully they have like a Ryan Coogler. Hopefully they have like a high profile person of color of that community to helm that project. I don't know if that's true
or not.
It's
not a Michael Bay film or anything.
Right.
Yeah, we'll see.
I know that his story is often. Like in the Ultimates, depicted as he is an Asian American who just wants to be like a normal dude in America, but he has like cultural influence from his family trying to peel him back into like crime, basically.
That's the vibe.
But a lot of the and a lot of the stories are just about him like trying to fit in and be like just an Asian American dude with like a normal life, but also sometimes he punches people.
I mean, don't we all?
All right, so.
But what if he collects the 10 rings and then summons the dragon?
I don't know if that's how that works.
What if he becomes a super him and has to fight a giant water dragon in the middle of a city? That's Sonic Adventure reference.
All right, that's why that didn't land.
You're not speaking to the choir here on that one.
I played that game multiple times and I didn't even know what you were getting at until you.
It's the end of that game, Dustin.
Yeah, you're right.
You fight chaos and it's a big ass dragon and it looks terrible because it was on the Dreamcast.
Mm-hmm.
It's old.
Anyway, hating on the Dreamcast.
No, it's just old.
All right, so
and like same.
For reference, I looked at IMDb and two of the writers
right now
for Shang-Chi are Asian American, and most of the cast is Asian American.
Right,
yeah, I knew that.
Set production, too.
Yeah, I mean, it like really, Disney's been doing a good job as far as letting stories about, you know, minority groups be done by that group. Like for Luke Cage,
about it, but they know that the hell would be raised if they didn't.
Sure. Well,
yeah,
but I mean,
that's making
the norm is important.
But they,
you know.
Here's the other thing, just because
the fact of why they do it is cynical doesn't mean it's any less good.
No, you're totally right about that, 1,000%. And I'll go do you one better, because this is the thing that worries me about that stuff, and is where I think a lot of these productions fall down, is that you're a 10,000% right that giving underrepresented people more representation is right, no matter who's giving the representation. But when it comes to these creative works, the parts where it can all fall apart and go to shit, and an individual project you don't know until it comes out, is at the end of the day, the people at the highest levels of these organizations are white people. They're mostly white men. So if it comes down to a struggle between the writing staff and the white people who have to okay these products,
who gets to
choose what gets done?
The director is an Asian American from Maui.
Hopefully they let creative people do the things that they're going to do.
My optimistic take is that the heads of Disney don't give a shit. Like, they don't care one bit.
Yeah.
And that's why Star Wars happened. They just, hands off, you know. do whatever you want. Just as long
and with the new property, I really wonder if, like, since this is like an untested, like it's not a sequel to a single Marvel movie. Like, I guess it's in the Marvel canon or whatever. But because my read on how Frozen 2 went to shit, because I think that movie is atrocious, and I suspect it got way more tampering than like a non. Than like another Disney movie might, just because the merchandise sales were so strong. So they were like, all right, we need to, like, look, this has got to sell as many toys as the other one. So, like, since so much of our business is based on this for the next 12 months, we're going to give you notes until you fucking drown in them.
That could be even separate by studio.
Yeah, like their animation studio. It could be very never, different. Yeah, you never know until the thing comes out. But,
weird stuff.
Yeah, I hope it's good though. And like I said, I hope that Asian people across the world and Asian Americans enjoy it. Like, I hope it does them, because man, if there's any group that could use a win, they're close to the top. Just like, I hope it serves that community well, for fuck's sake.
Not to deify him, but Kevin Feige's involved, so like,
right.
When was the last time he had a miss?
I was actually going to bring that up, that Kevin Feige, and I mean, really the entire executive producer, like, line, all the executive producers on it, and then Kevin Feige as a producer, they all seem to maintain a relatively hands-off approach when it comes to these things that are important to X, you know, community, rather than being overly invested in, like, trying to make changes as far as a perspective that they don't have.
They've done a really good job putting other people in charge who can tell those stories. Yeah, and then just being like, all right, it's your story, tell it. Here are the footnotes of how you have to tie it into the rest of the MCU or whatever, but we're not going to, like...
And then these are lines that we can't necessarily cross for...
All characters are actually Skrulls.
Oh, no. Oh, man. That's the darkest timeline. Like, every minority character in Marvel was a Skrull. Oh, no. Everybody in Black Panther, everybody, like, good lord.
No, thank you.
Unsubscribe.
Yeah,
I'm
going to
put that bell back together. I don't want that.
Oh, no.
Oh, man. Yeah, oh, we'll see.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah, I hope it's good. I hope I get to see it in a movie theater.
I mean,
optimistic. Ants are good.
It's funny, like, I'm optimistic of these movies made for broader representation because of the cynical approach that corporate cynicism in operating in a way to not receive backlash is a really funny thing, and eventually it creates norms and standards that, you know, industry-wide make it so that the thing that people were bitching about happens because the corporations were being cynical. It just becomes the normal thing. So, I mean, it is a good thing. It's just, it's a really funny way of getting there.
People who raise a stink can make a difference.
And with that, I think, unless anyone's got anything else that they definitively want to throw out, I might call it a show. That was a nice healthy conversation.
Falcon and the Winter Soldier a 4.5 out of 5.
I was going to say, right? I give it like an A.
I really liked it.
Like a low A, not an A minus.
I give it X minus 2, which are... X minus 1.5.
And I think, to be clear, like, the parts of it that were bad were fairly stupid. It's just the strong notes that it had were so strong that I am able to ignore the bad notes.
Yeah, you're right.
Its highs are really high.
I will say this, for however, my expectations were exceeded for sure. Even the things that I like, the things that I don't like about it, I think it turned out way better than I expected it to before watching it. So,
like Dustin said towards the beginning, they really, really nailed the titular characters.
Yeah,
what you will of the rest of the show. Sam and Bucky's stories were handled like immaculately.
Yeah, they did a really good job.
Yeah, I love those characters and their arc.
Yeah,
and this is exactly how it was with WandaVision. I went in not caring about these characters, an especially large amount, and kind of not caring about the show. And damn it all if they made me care.
Yeah, I was, especially going into WandaVision, I was just like, oh, whatever, this is just going to be a thing. But that set me up a little more interested for this show, and I was not disappointed.
Okay, and I think maybe we'll go out on this thought, and this is like tying into that what we've kind of been saying this whole time. Like, in my mind, the character, the most titular character, had, like, I think they had even more work to do with Sam than they did with Bucky, because Bucky's story is so tied to Steve Rogers that, like, he kind of did have
a Sam show before a Bucky show.
Yeah, that he kind of did have, like, you know what Bucky's pain is coming into this, like definitively.
I mean, he basically was like half of all of the Captain America movies, really. Mm-hmm. Like, he was with him all through, like, while he was becoming a soldier, he was the antagonist of the second one, and he was the main reason for conflict in the third. Like, he's had
And over the course of the series, they show you that, you know, Sam's pains are, you know, he is a side character in the MCU that's literally part of his canon, like, problems, is that, like, he's just part of the cast, and he doesn't, like, you know, he's not well paid enough, he's not that well supported.
Yeah, he was just, he was literally, like, just a supporting character in Winter Soldier.
On top of all that shit, he still just has to deal with being a black man in America, and, like, the fact that that sucks, you know, a pretty significant amount of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But he keeps fighting anyway, and, you know, he's got other people's back, and, how good. Man, what a...
Loki's in a month and a half.
That's
the first one where I'm like actually already invested, and it would be wild if they did a miss on this one.
We'll see what happens. I'll be interested to see how that turns out. If anything, my fear with that show is that it might be more of the things I didn't like about this one. Like, they might just layer on the references and the, like...
Yeah.
Like, my fear is that it's going to be all that shit, like, almost all the time. It's just like, here's stuff you remember from the Marvel Universe and hints of things to come and, like, you know...
I want Thor the Dark World, the TV show. Hijinks.
Great.
I don't need him to have, like, painful revelations about his past and character.
Right.
he's going to.
And, you know, fight the Avengers again.
I think a lot of that show is going to be Loki... A past version of Loki who never became an even remotely good person, seeing other versions of himself do things and growing from it. So be prepared for that.
And they've gone full, like, that show has gone, like, they've gone full Rick and Morty with it. He's not the Loki, he's a Loki.
Right, yeah, exactly.
So, sure. We'll see what happens.
We'll see.
But anyway.
I like it to be like a series of Rick and Morty type episodes.
Great.
So if that's what happens, I called it just now. It's pretty baked into the trailer, so it's not exactly a huge revelation.
Yeah, right.
I'm in. Let's go.
That's what I want.
I just want to see Tom Hiddleston on screen.
Yeah. So with that,
that's fair.
I want him to be tied back into the main continuity by the end, so that he can be in Avengers 5.
He will be. Probably.
Just like Gamora.
We will call it a show. We will talk about more Marvel stuff, more whatever,
who knows,
at some point in the future. Thank you all for joining me talking about stuff. And until next time, we'll see you later, internet.
Quit.
Bye.
Goodbye, everybody.